This week's episode of Pixel Chicken Podcast is not for the spoiler sensitive. From the points at 20 minutes and 20 seconds all the way through an hour and 5 minutes, we will be discussing the best ending and best twist category for the following games: Mad Max, Bloodborne, The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt, Metal Gear Solid 5, Batman, Arkham Knight, Xenoblade Chronicles X, The Order 1886, Until Dawn, and Halo 5. Once again, that is from 20 minutes and 20 seconds all the way through an hour and 5 minutes. It's good stuff, so you should listen. Don't say I didn't warn you.
All right.
So are we... Oh, you deleted that?
Oh,
you son of a bitch. I was going to put that...
Fuck!
Can you whine a little?
No, I can't.
Okay.
Do something sexy.
And welcome to 2016. It's a year so far of terrorism and violence
and video games.
It's been a wild ride so far. We are here today to deliberate live for you our Game of the Year nominations, contenders, categories, and it's going to be a bloodbath. I'm calling it. Especially Phil will make enemies of all three of us.
Very true.
For different reasons.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not all of them will tie back to Metal Gear somehow, though.
Yeah. You're goddamn right they will.
Yeah. And speaking of Phil, he's across the table from me.
Hello. How you guys doing?
Doing good.
Awesome.
Striker, to my left. Always at the head of the table.
Hey. That's what I'm about.
I don't know if you guys know, but the format here, Striker's always at the head of the table. Probably because it's his house, his table, his dick.
My dick, my table. I've always said that.
That's kind
since
of
day
yeah.
one.
Day one.
The day you were born.
Day yeah. one. Yep. And Johnny.
Yeah.
To the right.
I am to the right.
Ever illustrious.
Always right.
Johnny's got a nice shirt on.
Johnny has a nice ass shirt. I like it. I like polka dots.
Polka dots are nice.
Let me know. I like polka dots. Yeah. This is a general rule.
Shirt of the year. Starting it off.
Shirt of the year.
Polka dot shirt.
I am eliminating it.
So far. So far.
And it's the only nomination.
This is ruthless already.
So far, that's my favorite shirt I've seen this year.
Yeah, mine too. But too bad it's eliminated.
You motherfucker.
Damn it.
How are we all doing? Are we ready?
I'm ready.
Are we ready to get the show on the road?
Yeah, let me just say real quick for you listeners out there. This is going to be not your typical Game of the Year show. This is going to be our we're going to have very... some different categories and just some things we thought sounded fun and would lead to some interesting discussions. So this ain't your mama's Game of the Year.
Halfway through, we're throwing Phil down a laundry chute.
That's true. We are.
Bottom filled with raccoons.
While he's on fire.
Ooh. Yep.
IGN doesn't do that shit.
IGN doesn't do that.
I'm too afraid.
Yeah. Anyways, fellas, let's get into it with our first category. That would be... favorite indie title of the year, and we got some nominees here: The Beginner's Guide, Bedlam, Paint the Town Red, Axiom Verge, Undertale, Sunless Sea, and Westerotto. What's the subtitle of Westerotto? Full double-barreled action or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Wish you would have put that on the doc, you motherfucker.
I'm
just kidding. Anyways, we're just gonna kind of... I guess I'll throw this one out there. I don't think Westerotto should be on there.
What? You don't like Westerotto?
I like Westerotto, but
I like the way you say it.
It's about Westerotto. Westerotto.
Am I doing it?
Yeah, you're doing it.
Why should it be on there?
Well, so I think that Westerotto, it sort of has like a... Did you play it?
I did. Yeah.
It has... Somebody described it as, and I don't agree with this entirely, but they described it as the best Western revenge game they could imagine in terms of like a player crafted story. It's very simplistic. The combat, the world, everything's laid out kind of like a classic Legend of Zelda game, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of freedom to it. You can, your goal is to find the killer of your family. And so you're searching the West for that person. There's all these named NPCs. They all wear a certain color of clothing. And you're gaining hints as you do quests in the world as to each part of clothing that that person wears.
Like Carmen Sandiego.
Yeah.
Much like.
Yeah. And there is a mechanic that the health bar is based on hats. So you, when you get shot, it knocks your hat off. And
God damn it!
To get another health.
Okay, you've won this. You've won this battle.
You just pick up another hat.
You've won this battle.
You won it because you named a mechanic that River and I invented. That
we invented it in college.
You can also...
Maybe it was made by a student that...
There was this one guy who stole all our ideas and was a punk bitch.
Yeah, we had a
vape jackets.
We had a name for him that I won't repeat, but
we can't repeat it.
So another mechanic I really liked in this game is that you could just draw your gun at any time.
Yeah.
And you could point it at somebody to intimidate them. So you could be talking to your dad and just you'd be like, "Yeah, son, I sure love you," and you just draw your gun and be like, "Well, that's not very nice," and then you shoot him. And since, or he's like your uncle or something, if you die, you come back to that same spot every time. But now when you come back, he's a ghost.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, there's all sorts of cool little details, but you can intimidate like everyone in the game. You can talk to all the NPCs, everybody can be talked to, and you can draw their gun on them and piss them off, or you can get information out of them that way.
So Westerado stays in the run.
Yeah, you swayed,
I think it's good enough.
I'm going to say Bedlam is off.
Tell me about Bedlam.
I don't think... Has anyone here played Bedlam but me? So it's an easy pick. Bedlam is kind of a retrospective like walkthrough of the FPS genre, so it will change gameplay styles, change kind of like the graphics, of course, the way that, you know, the people you're talking to, the way that they talk to you, the objectives will change, like, kind of, you know, you'll see one of the first objectives is basically like go through a go and capture 3 points and then move forward. But it's set in, so it's a very familiar like objective, but it's set in a like early 90s Quake, very pixelated graphics. But the whole time, one of the kickers, one of the best parts I think about the game is not the game. I think it's the there's this like really Welsh woman who is the voice actor who's playing this game, and the kind of idea is that she doesn't really know how she got into this 90s game, and so the whole time she's just acting incredulous, like, "What the fuck is all this?" And I think it's pretty funny, but the game, at least as much as I've played maybe 2 or 3 hours of it, it just doesn't play very well. It's not very fun to play. It's one of those games where I found myself kind of just keep on playing for the humor and the VO and stuff. So I think I've had better indie experiences this year. And can we delete that one off the list?
Get it off there.
Okay.
I remember hearing that about that game. It's
Bedlam? I think I might have. Go ahead and do it.
I feel like some indie games, just in general, they rely too heavily on their very unique mechanics.
That's very true.
And not so much the core gameplay.
Yeah.
So you have this very unique experience that's interesting and new, but it doesn't play very well sometimes.
I think another one we can delete, kind of going off of that, is the Beginner's Guide. And I talked about that briefly on a show a couple months ago, but it's another one of those things that you really don't do anything the entire game. You walk through and listen to a narrator, and it's while being interesting and engaging throughout.
Okay, I'm remembering this.
It kind of feels like more of a museum piece than a video game that we played, so... I think we can delete that one too.
Okay.
So Westeros is staying. Johnny, you seem to love Sunless Sea.
Yeah. Have any of you played Sunless Sea?
I've played a little bit of it.
So
I played about 45 minutes to an hour of it.
Have any of you played Sid Meier's Pirates?
Yes.
So imagine, for those who haven't played it, Sid Meier's Pirates mixed with H.P. Lovecraft and deep role-playing. Lots of excellently written text and prose all over that game. I mean, it's mostly a text game, but the visuals are still very nice. You are basically the world is it's sort of an apocalypse, and there's just this cave that's sort of covered this massive yeah. part of the world, and there is an ocean that has come in, and there's only, you know, little islands and stuff in this world that's basically a giant cave, hence the sunless sea, and it's, you know, cold and damp and everything. It's just a big cave atmosphere.
Pretty terrifying.
It's absolutely terrifying.
Sounds really interesting.
There's, the game deals with a lot with insanity, cannibalism, all of the Lovecraftian weirdness. Mm-hmm. And it does it better than any Lovecraftian game I'd ever seen, aside from Bloodborne. But
the Cthulhu in it?
Yeah. And it's got...
It does?
Sunless Sea?
Who was it at work that says that funny in a funny way? Someone said it.
Everybody says it in a funny way.
Nobody knows how to pronounce it.
Some people say Cthulhu. Was it?
I think it was that.
They actually debate how to properly pronounce
Phil,
it.
Phil, you, of all people, you would know how to pronounce it.
How do you pronounce it?
It's impossible to pronounce with human tongue.
What do you say?
Yeah, what do you what say do you when you have to say,
I
say it?
I just say Cthulhu. Cthulhu.
That's wrong. Anyways, sunless sea.
there's all sorts of stuff. Like, there's a part, basically, if you run out of... Because the world is vast, and each location has a different story to it, and there's a lot of locations. And there are some things that are so imaginatively weird that I can't describe it. Like, there's like a city of weird molten smith people, but the text describes that as soon as you enter, you feel this weird sense of dread, and there's just something wrong about this city that's like molten flowing through it. You just find in the cracks of the earth, and there's all these people that just stare at you and they don't talk. And you come back, because basically you're exploring to go back to New London or whatever, Fallen London, and report to the Admiral what you find. And you tell him about that city, and he says, oh, can I see that? And he takes your report, and he rips it up, and he throws it in the fire.
Oh,
he's
shit.
Like, we won't talk about that.
So what is it about this game that...
First of all, I think this game can stay.
Yeah.
It sounds really fascinating.
Yeah, you're telling me a lot more about it than I think. I think we can take off Paint the Town Red. We'll come back to Sunless Sea. I think there's a lot more to say about that game.
Okay, yeah.
But I think we can take off Paint the Town Red.
None of you
have ever played it. You've probably seen a lot of GIFs of it, or GIFs, or whatever the fuck we're saying.
It sounds familiar.
It's GIF. So, it's... it's that game where it's a lot of blocky dudes, and it's... shooting people's faces off with shotguns. It's a brawler.
Yeah.
It gives you a bunch of scenarios.
I'm familiar with it.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay. One that I played, you walk into a discotheque and there's a bunch of people dancing and your only objective is to fucking kill everyone before they kill you. Yeah, it's violent as fuck, dude. It's really fun. It's really cool because you can go in and like, you know, each setting will have its own different unique... you know, like weapons that you can pick up and stuff. Like if you find a lot of it is about exploration and finding the best kind of weapons to tackle a you know scenario with.
It sounds like
do you guys remember
Hotline Miami or, in a way?
It's like if Hotline Miami was slowed down a lot and also played from a first person perspective.
Hmm.
That's a really good parallel.
It sounds interesting, but it doesn't sound like a.
It's not. Not particularly deep. It's kind of, you know. Do you guys remember the? Well, I guess a better example would be Chronicles of Riddick.
Yeah.
You got the first person combat, so you got a kick, you got some punches, and then you got a block. So it works a lot like that, and you can go and pick stuff up, pick cups up, pick swords up. One of the cool things is that the killing of people is very. Graphic, I would say. You can like blow like parts of their. It's kind of like what's the Soldier of Fortune?
Yeah,
how you can blow half dunk. Of their head because it's all voxels. I'm pretty
right,
sure.
Yeah.
And so you can like you know take a baseball bat and split a guy's head in two three floors. Yeah,
Minecraft meets Postal.
Oh yeah, it's pretty amazing and it's a fun thing to mess around with and shit, and it looks silly, but I don't think it's particularly deep, and I don't think it deserves to be.
That's fair.
Our favorite one. So let's take that one off.
all the games you've taken off are games that you maybe want to check out, though. So.
Oh, yeah, dude. I mean, yeah, that's the point, is these are all, you know, some of our favorite experiences. So, all right, Johnny, I feel like this category is kind of me and you. So what's your win?
My win is Sunless Sea, hands down. Undertale, I would say if I put more hours into it, because it's really cool, but I've got like 4 hours into it. And while it's awesome, it hasn't captivated me as much as Sunless Sea has. And nobody's fucking played it, and everybody's played Undertale. Did you watch the Game Awards? Because it was nominated.
People are going ape shit over Undertale.
One guy. Yep. And I didn't know anything about it other than that the reviews were really high.
For Sunless Sea?
Undertale.
Gotcha.
Destructoid gave Sunless Sea like a 10 when it came out. I was like, what is this? I've never even heard of it.
Axiom Verge wasn't made by very many people either, though, right?
Fuck. Wait, hold on.
None of these games were.
Hold on. Okay. Axiom Verge is my pick. Have you played Axiom Verge?
I've watched a lot of
players. Have you got motherfuckers ever played Super Metroid?
Oh yeah.
I love Metroidvanias.
Yes. This is the best Metroidvania game made since Super Metroid.
Wow.
To my understanding,
I think it's better than Shadow Complex. I think it's better than
What about the Vanias? I mean,
The ones that I think touch it most are obviously Symphony of the Night and whatever. What was the one? Lament of Sorrow on the DS. I think those come close. I think this game beats them. I think it's got a very unique style. Some of the story elements are very interesting and mature, and I think it's got a killer soundtrack, a lot of cool weapons, a lot of cool ways Metroidvania obviously always has the get an item, come back to this place.
Right.
This has this, but in a lot of more creative ways. Like, you get a... you said you've seen it being played. You get a beam that basically, like... It's... I forget what it's called, but it basically phases things in and out of existence. So it's this thing you get early on, and so it'll allow you to, identify certain blocks or enemies. And you know, if you need to create a platform, you'll shoot that and then be able to unshoot it and, like, enemies like that, too, so that you phase them in and out and stuff like that. It's just a lot of the items that lend themselves to the Metroidvania, I think, are more creative than than what I've seen. And the formula is just one that I love, so...
I would like to say, and this doesn't really fall into my favorite-looking game, but I would like to say this. It looks to me like how I would picture playing an older game that I played as a kid in my head.
Yeah.
It's a slightly more refined,
it gets
little bit better looking than Super Metroid.
It gets the style and the art down so well of what it's going for.
Very much so.
It's aesthetically also, it's weirder looking than the others, which is cool. Mm-hmm.
Totally.
I saw some bosses in some later game stuff that just look really...
Boss and I really like the designs. They're very... It's got some really cool stuff, that's for sure.
This all being said, I think Sunless Sea is a bit more original, and I'm fine with giving Sunless Sea the title.
Sunless Sea sounds really interesting to me, and just the way that you described some of the worlds and stuff, I think that's something that's really, I don't know, I guess not utilized as much, just having really interesting new ideas for worlds and people that...
I mean, a fucking scene under
with you in different ways. That is a really amazing concept to me.
There's so much text in the game. There's so much... They've written, so many novels worth of text. They posted the amount of words that show up in the game. And so, the flavor text is probably some of the best I've ever seen in a video game. Because that's what they're good at. They're mostly just a team of writers. And they are amateur game developers, so the game itself is all right. The combat, it's like Sid Meier's Pirates, which I love. It's really simple, but everything works to carry the world and the story just so well. And the themes and all these things that just don't get tackled by a game... It harkens back to that era where you'd have a text adventure kind of thing, and it would paint a picture that was very, very different and incredibly immersive.
Yeah.
And to be able to do that now, but have it with all the visuals, and actually see, like, the monster designs. But, like, sometimes there's a part where you're, like, sailing in this one area, and I think it's random when and where it happens, but there's, like, this, you know, at the bottom of the sea, because it's top-down, you see your little ship, and you got your little light, and you're basically going through the fog and mist and everything, and you're sailing on your little shitty tugboat with, like, a rusty cannon, and all of a sudden,
fuck yeah,
you know, deep below, all your crew, you read the text, says your crew start, like, worshipping the ground and shivering and... like foaming at the mouth, except for like you, and yeah, you're like, "What the fuck?" And you look down, and there's this big ass monster, like 20 times the size of your ship, underneath you, underneath the water, and it opens as one eyeball.
Awesome.
That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, masterful simplicity.
Can we say that that favorite indie title is Sunless Sea with the runner up of Axiom Verge? Are we all on
that
board?
That sounds great.
Okay,
we'll do it.
Johnny, you did it. You sold me.
Yep. So, next up, we have some fun categories. We're going to start with favorite ending.
All right.
So, we've got some, obviously, some spoilers. We've got The Witcher 3, Mad Max, Halo 5, The Order 1886.
Jesus Christ. Put that
back. I did the fuck with you all. Bloodborne and Batman Arkham Knight. So I think we can safely eliminate The Order 1886. I think that game gets shit on more than it deserves to.
I've been playing it, and I gotta say, it is a perfectly adequate fun.
It's just super unoffensive. Like, it's just fun. It's just fine.
It's a fine game.
And I get the big complaints with the $60 purchase.
Oh, yeah. That's totally justified. Yeah. I got it for $10.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't. I mean, for a $10 game,
it's like Until Dawn, real short, real simple. Yeah, exactly. I paid $60, but I sold it for like $35, so whatever.
The way that it wrapped up, though, was, I thought, pretty good.
Did you finish it? Go ahead.
No.
I looked in depth. I basically watched the whole game.
It was contrived. I mean, it was super. Did you finish it?
No, not yet.
Okay.
But
I know how it ends.
They recycled the first boss. Then they did the most cliched gunshot fade to black to some character you don't know, and then they set it up with a forced sequel. Everything I hate in an ending.
Yeah, I can understand that. Can I say one nominee on this list, and I don't know who, Mad Max, who added that?
I think I did for some reason.
Okay, so I...
It's okay. Let's delete the order.
I didn't beat Mad Max.
Let's delete the order.
We're gonna get rid of the order.
Yeah,
that's
get rid of the order.
So I'm gonna talk about the ending to Mad Max.
Okay,
Johnny, I apologize. So this probably doesn't deserve to be on the list next to some of these other games.
It's
but
no
I will
story
say,
this game, so I'm
I will say that I really enjoyed the simplicity of the ending, just for what it sort of symbolized and how true it was to Mad Max.
Did it end with him just walking away from...
No, it was better than that.
Okay.
So I'm going to just kind of paint the picture of the ending just so you guys can understand why I think it was cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so at some point in the game you meet like this girl and she has like a daughter that she wants you to help save.
Yeah.
Okay, so you meet her, you meet the daughter, he's reluctant to try and save them, he goes off on his own thing, and then he, you know, has a change of heart, comes back, helps save the girl. It's you know, a touching thing, although it's more of like a side mission type of thing. They aren't that major of characters. And anyway, the girl gives him like a little globe, a little snow globe, and he's like, you know, oh, what's this? And he ends up putting it like on his dash as a you know, sort of decoration.
Yeah.
Sort of like he had the pictures in the beginning of the game of his family. So anyway, the end of the game, you find out that the guy, the main bad guy in the game, what's his name? I don't even remember.
Scrotum.
Scrotum.
Yeah, Scrotum.
So, whatever, Scrotus.
Yeah.
So, he ends up killing the girl and the daughter. Scrotus does. It's like, it really, I was surprised how dark it was. He kills them.
He's alive?
And you go to, or maybe it's not Scrotus, but his, like, underling, the main bad guy in the game, whatever. Anyway, so you go to exact your revenge. And he's in this big, giant, like, huge fucking truck. And he's got a caravan of guys. And you have to fight them. And you have to, like, shoot the shield off of his car and blow it up. And it's this big battle, you know, just cool, a cool battle way to end the game. And it ends up, you shoot it, and it ends like you're approaching this cliff, and there's a cutscene. And I know I'm getting really in depth,
but no, it's fine
with it. So you're approaching. So you get this cutscene. You're approaching a large drop off, and Max jumps out of his car and uses it to propel into the truck to hit the final blow, so it'll go over the edge. But then the back of the truck opens up, and the interceptor flies out. It just, like, the truck's going down the edge, the interceptor comes out, and he's in it. He stole the interceptor. This is, like, the whole point of the game is to get your car
back. Yeah,
And so he comes out on the interceptor, and you're on foot, and you're in this giant, open, like, battlefield above, a cliff drop-off. And you're rolling around, dodging the interceptor, and then you finish it off. You get in the interceptor. He puts his picture back up on the interceptor, like, takes it out of his pocket, puts it back up. Drives off, and it just shows him driving, like, zoomed in on his face, and he's like fucking angry because he killed him, you know, killed the girl. Yeah. And it's just like, wow. It all circles back to the beginning of the game. And then as he drives off, it has the Mad Max title card, and it shows the snow globe, and he just drove off and left it. So it's like, it was like the appreciation I had for it was that it was simplistic and that it all circled back to the beginning. Had a late title card. And it was almost like all the stuff in the game didn't even matter to the character. Like, the character exists this stuff happens.
That's
Mad Max.
Yeah, that harkens back to the first movie.
It does.
Yeah.
This character exists no matter what happens in the world. Yeah. You know, he's Mad Max. He's always going to be there. And so I enjoyed it. I thought it was better than I expected.
Okay.
So I like that ending. But with that said, I'm okay eliminating it just because I think there are better endings on this list.
Okay. That sounds great, though. I think we can take off Halo 5.
Halo 5?
I liked it. I liked it a lot. And one of the things I appreciated most about it is that it left kind of the polar opposite of Mad Max. It left the world and the Halo universe in a far different place than it was at the beginning.
Interesting.
None of you have played it.
I've seen some gameplay.
Okay.
I didn't play
it. Do you want me to go into it? Or, I mean, we're taking it off, so I don't really
go,
need
go,
to.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Or if we're taking it off. I'm indifferent either way.
And being is that now Cortana is like a really bad villain.
Sweet.
And the way she gets there and the way and her kind of motivations towards it, while still being somewhat like, it's a weird, the way that they
paint it. Makes me feel sad for
some reason. It kind of left me with a solemn feeling because it ended, you know, it's a dark middle chapter in this trilogy. Right. It's, you know, but the way that they treat Cortana and Chief, their relationship, makes it even more sad.
Yeah.
Because she's still, like, their relationship is still one of the ultimate bond somehow. And, like, she's trying to justify herself in doing this is all for, like...
They've been through so much together.
Yeah, and now you're kind of, like, Halo 6 facing off against her and this thing that she's amassed to try to, you know...
Is she like a mega flood or something, or?
A lot like that, but with some different things that harken back to, like, I don't remember what's the race called,
the Zerg.
Yeah, the Zerg. I was gonna say Protoss, but
this sounds a lot like StarCraft II with Kerrigan and the Zerg.
It's like that, and the only reason I put it on there is because it wasn't. It kind of left me like, wow, okay, well, everything, like, we're not fighting. It kind of makes for a really grand thing. Like, we're not fighting, like...
Sets up better for the fifth
game. It does. For the sixth game. It leaves it in a place where, like, okay, everything has changed. What's going to happen in the sixth game?
The thing I like about an ending like that is it leaves you interested in coming back to see how the story unfolds in six without just, like, crapping a sequel tease at you.
Mm-hmm. Well,
because it changes the world and the fundamental, like...
It doesn't leave you with, like, the Order 1886. It's a four sequel. It's like, okay, here's this, but you have no clue what the fucking sequel is going to be. It's going to be...
That's especially bad for, like, a first game.
Oh, yeah,
like,
exactly.
Franchise, exactly. Now, you're going to love this, and everybody's
It's like, this actually gives you like an idea. I was like, okay, this sixth Halo is going to be fucked up. Like some stuff's
going
to happen.
You have idea of where it's going.
Yeah, and there's a lot of like kind of story bits that go on throughout Halo 5 that you can see kind of the beginnings of how this revelation affects those.
Mm-hmm.
And just the way that it does it, and like, yeah, they took a character that you've known through four games and kind of flipped it on her head, and they're starting to do that. But
and I think that's great. She apparently died in the fourth game, right? She just died, quote unquote.
Yeah, she was.
So see. if they were gonna, what I love about that is if they're gonna kill a character off and then bring that character back, you better do something really interesting about it.
They found a way to justify it, also.
Yeah, you better find a way to justify it.
So it was.
But with that said, so we're eliminating that one.
I mean,
do we really want to? I mean, we just talked about it in such depth.
Well, we can.
I mean, we can. Let's hold on to it.
Okay.
Let's talk. Does anyone have anything that they would be super glad eliminating or super comfortable with?
Yeah.
I'd say Bloodborne.
I'm going to.
That's because.
See, I want to keep Bloodborne on there.
All right,
but well, I do.
Did
I want to
see the ending of Bloodborne.
I want to eliminate.
I've seen it, but I don't have the context.
I want to eliminate Arkham Knight.
Okay, so I'm going to have to fight you on this.
Okay,
this is my favorite ending, and
wow,
and I'm going to explain why.
I'll fucking kill you, sorry.
Okay, so, and it's not like the final shot of the game or the thing after the Joker challenge that makes it the best game.
The Joker's in it.
It was the sort of ending that I believe gamers wanted from the first two games. It really looks past a final fight with him as like a Hulk monster or fighting whatever, freaking Clayface. You know, to see the Joker.
The ending of two was so stupid. Sorry. Anyway, Arkham Knight.
And I think that this conclusion between Batman the Joker and this game, which is the climax of the game, compensates so well. It makes up so much for the first two endings. So what you have is throughout the game you have the Joker string in Batman's blood, and it's kind of taking him over. And I thought that was going to be really stupid, but then you have this segment where you are inside Batman's head, and his head has been infested.
That part was incredible.
This is what people have been wanting to see.
Is this included in the ending, or is this just a part?
This is the climax of the game.
It's the last act.
Okay.
So
this is the climax of the game.
It's okay.
And what you're doing is you are playing as that voice in Batman's head. You are playing that thing that has haunted him for so long, the Joker. You are killing everything you see in sight. You are in this dream world, and you are making it into your own domain as you take over Batman's body and his soul. But slowly but surely, the spirit of Batman, his mind starts to take over. His mind starts to retaliate against you. And what's as great is because you're stepping outside the shoes of Batman. You're stepping outside the shoes of the character you've been playing with for four games. I was actually scared of him. I was scared of Batman. Batman actually made me jump. There are certain segments in the game where, say, statues of Batman just randomly appear. You take a shotgun. You shoot them all. And you just endlessly shoot them all. And I'm just wondering, what the hell is happening? Why isn't anything happening? And then Batman breaks out of one of the statues and grabs me by the throat. And I was just like, oh, shit. No, I literally jumped. I was scared of this guy. And
who are you playing as?
You were playing as the Joker.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, see, because
you were playing as the Joker inside Batman's
dream sequence.
It's
this dream sequence, yeah. And yeah. It's basically, it's like a metaphorical thing that Batman's trying to get rid of the Joker's insane voice in his head.
Yeah.
It's playing out in a physical
level. Summed it up really good. And to see that happen with a throwback to Arkham Asylum really brings a very satisfactory conclusion to that game.
Now, Phil, you'll have to refresh me. I remember the ending as the literal final scene that shows, which I thought was kind of, I didn't really get it. I don't really understand. It was really vague, and I guess I don't know if they were going for like symbolism.
It's not the bit. I'm not expecting that.
But what happens right before that? Is that the dream sequence? And then he
ties up all his loose ends, right. Which I thought was, I think had a great sense of finality to it.
I agree,
and I love that, and I just was so floored by that Joker aspect. That's the thing that saves it. Other than that, it would be sort of decent or worth being. It would be a great front runner.
Yeah.
But I think it is the Joker segment that I found so compelling that really puts it at number one for me.
That's fair. I can't really argue with you.
Let's
there.
Take Halo off. Okay. Yeah, I'm fine with taking Halo off. I think that beats Halo.
Yeah, that part sounds
pretty. There's a sense of finality in what you explained, I guess.
Yeah, it is a really interesting.
The end of the trilogy, I really hope I explained it clearly. Did I?
No, yeah, you did.
I think you did.
Thank God.
You convinced me. It was
because that's a complicated ass ending to explain.
That part sounds right up my alley. Sounds really cool.
And I will say this, Phil. I agree with you because when I was playing through the game, I was really enjoying what I was seeing, mm-hmm. but I was still sort of hesitant to fully let myself enjoy it because I was worried where it was going to go. I was like, this can only go a few different ways, mm-hmm. and I'm not a big fan of what they're going to be. But the more I played the game, the more I realized that it was just really well written. There was some really good stuff there. There was some stuff I wasn't a huge fan of. I felt like they did a little too much of the tank versus tank stuff.
A little bit of that, yeah.
But the story was so fucking compelling in that game.
They killed off Poison Ivy.
Okay.
She died a hero.
Let me cut this. Yeah. The Witcher 3 is on this list, right?
Yeah.
Whether it be winner or runner up.
Which is difficult.
So this is Bloodborne and Batman now.
So Bloodborne.
Very different.
Bloodborne is incredibly different, and it's really hard to explain. And the problem with Bloodborne's ending is that it's perfect for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, like Stryker said, it is very different. So the game is super weird, as some people may know.
Gave me goosebumps.
Okay. And so first of all, what makes the ending one of my favorite endings? Top 10, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Is it does one of my favorite things. It has a human on human boss fight, and it's one of the best I've ever played.
Yes,
you're fighting
the way it was introduced.
Oh my god!
It is one of the coolest things that I experienced in 2015 at all.
It's just there. You go to this area that you've been going to the entire game, but now the cabin's burning down.
So
that sounds terrifying, just thinking about it.
Go ahead. So yeah, basically, you're in this nightmare throughout Bloodborne. This nightmare started because what was cool about Bloodborne's ending is that by the time you've gotten to that point, you went from knowing nothing to knowing a lot, but still feeling like you know nothing. Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that's hard. I will say this. That's the thing that's hard to compare Bloodborne's ending to these other games is because it's intentionally vague in a lot of ways. But it also has finality in the context of the game.
Yeah, but let's not forget that this is our favorite ending. Right.
So, well, to me, this is one of my favorite endings because I think it's impressive. I love mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And a part of me hates when a mystery gets solved. Like, I want to keep that mystery. Or I want to solve
absolutely.
It very slowly. And Bloodborne teaches you as much as it needs to, and then it just stops. It just says the rest mm-hmm. of it. And it's not like they're all plot holes or laziness.
No.
It's intentionally just like, figure it out if you want.
Which I imagine can be sounds like a very difficult, crafty thing for a writer to
accomplish. I think that sounds, and I've yet to hear about Witcher's ending, but I think that sounds better. I think that sounds, than Batman, I guess better is the worst absolute word I could say. I think that sounds, what's the
more timeless?
Perhaps? Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. It, more subtlety, more like, nuance, more like. Obviously, I'm not saying that the whole Batman thing being inside his head, but it feels. Bloodborne. A little more done. A little more like...
The thing that I loved about the Bloodborne ending was that it was so much of it was there, was really vague, and when you're playing the game, you don't quite understand what's, like what Johnny was saying. But when you get to this point in the game, you realize what the game is about, almost. Mm-hmm. Like you're wondering this whole time you're playing the game, are they going to explain more? Am I going to get to know what this is? Am I going to find out this?
Or is it just a bunch of weird shit?
And then you get to this point, and you're like, nothing matters. Like, that doesn't matter. This is what the game is about. You get to this point where you go back to a place that was like your safe haven. That's like the only place you can take breathers in this game. This incredibly difficult grind of the game. The Hunter's Dream. You go there, and it's like I said, it's your safe haven. It's like it's
just consumed in eternal cold fire.
And you go there. That's the thing. That the first thing you see, you go back to the Hunter's Dream, and you just see the house on fire. And it's like the most amazing thing. And I, like, as soon as I saw that, I literally was like, oh shit.
Is it a cabin or like just a normal house?
It's like a scary looking house. Oh, and then you go to the back. And
a field of white roses.
Yeah, Garamond's sitting there. And when the screen goes black, and it, depending on what option you choose, when the screen goes black and he says, Garamond joins the hunt, or whatever he says.
Garamond joins the hunt.
That was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. Like, I just was so blown away at how cool
just
it was.
He just gets out of his fucking wheelchair.
Huge
old
scythe.
Decrepit man just gets out of his wheelchair, whips out the coolest scythe I've ever seen, and then one of the most fun one-on-one battles I've ever played in a video game, with incredible music, so, in a field of roses. It was what I loved about Metal Gear Solid 3's ending.
Yes.
But, like, as a battle, even better.
It was. It was a great... And so let me say this, just to summarize. I loved Arkham Knight's ending for wrapping up the games. Like you said, I thought it wrapped them up incredibly well. I was super satisfied with most of it. Witcher, same thing. I loved the way the ending I got for The Witcher. I was really satisfied with it.
Incredibly satisfying, yeah.
But Bloodborne was my favorite ending of the year, I think.
Witcher was my favorite story, but Bloodborne definitely favorite ending.
Yeah, Witcher as a game, it's I mean,
I'm feeling the Bloodborne ending.
Yeah, watching the story unfold in Witcher I loved.
Yeah.
But Bloodborne, just if we're just taking the
we're
ending
just taking
by
ending,
itself.
Yeah.
I can't. It's my
fault.
So one very last thing about Bloodborne. To me, the ending isn't all the ending. Like, when you beat the game and you've learned all this stuff, there isn't, like you said, you watched it and it's like, oh, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
It's the context.
Yeah.
It's the second half of the game, like, is the ending. It's just the first half is like, is this weird for the sake of being weird? And the second half is just you figuring things out through the visual storytelling of just seeing stuff.
I love
piecing
that.
It together. Mm-hmm. And by the time you've gotten to the end, even though there's no big cutscenes or story or anything, you just kind of know now.
Yeah, you start to piece the story together in your head just from seeing things in the game without any cutscenes or I mean, maybe a couple, but just from, like, little cues, you start to piece your own story together in your head, and by the time you get to the end, you're like, I get what's going on to a certain extent. And it,
this may be a strange observation, and I know you're definitely more of a film buff than I am, but would you say that Bloodborne is the equivalent of a Stanley Kubrick film? Consider how vague The Shining is. I mean, people...
It's a lot like Eyes Wide Shut.
in a way, or like a kind of like a Ingmar Bergman or something, where you get to the end and it's about insanity and finding God, and then you just leaves it completely open and you have no idea, but you feel like you've learned something.
So, John, is Bloodborne your favorite ending of 2015?
Yeah,
I was gonna say I feel like that might actually win it, and then the discussion is runner up.
Phil. I mean,
I've given it everything I have. I can't really say much more. I know that game sounds really impactful.
Now, we haven't talked about The Witcher, so I mean, for runner up, Witcher versus Arkham Knight.
Damn it! Because I liked the ending to The Witcher. The ending that I got, I think, was probably the least final. It was really kind of opening up for another adventure. Really? I got the ending where both Geralt and Ciri live. And
Me too.
I did too.
But Geralt ended his adventures in mine. He just went to an island with Triss to just hang out and have lots of booty sex.
I never saw that though. Basically, that. My ending was when I got Geralt taking a brand new sword to Ciri, and then she pulls the sword out of the sheath and she's like, "Well, let's get to it," and puts it back in the sheath and it rolls credits. And that's
really
basically, yeah.
Oh, yeah, wow. For us, Garrett went to the land of wine and cheese and just, like, shelved his job.
Yeah. The land of wine and cheese?
Yeah, dude, the island's just, like, an artsy-fartsy island.
But it also left it open.
How
like,
do you get that?
Like, Johnny,
yeah,
and,
get that.
Johnny and my ending
was, you
have
to eat
like,
a lot more cheese.
Well,
you
just romance Triss, and she brings up, well, this is island, you can choose to say, that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, and when you... that's why you didn't get it, because you romanced Dandelion. The ending also implies it's like, you know, Geralt lived on with Triss and in this place, and he would still take contracts here and there just to...
Is there a slideshow narrator ending?
It has like the kind of... You know how sometimes in this story they have kind of small, like...
They conclude visual... enough through the actual game before they do that.
Yeah.
Okay. When they do that, that's like extra stuff.
Okay. Exactly.
All right.
So that being said, The Witcher's ending was wonderfully... sufficient for what the game was.
Yeah, yep.
I feel like the writing quality was so surprising and outstanding for the first 80% of the game that the last 20% of the game was more really good, mm-hmm. but I didn't feel like it was...
I felt like it dragged on a little bit, to be honest with you.
It dragged on a lot, but like the dragging on was great because there was like that was some of the best parts, but then you get to like the actual ending that you wanted to see, and I thought it kind of came kind of fast, which I was fine with because I played the game fucking forever.
Mm-hmm.
But it just kind of was like, oh, that's it.
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, I know we're not specifically talking about the ending, but endings are they kind of live and die by the context that they exist in.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's hard. It's hard because it's been a little while since I played Arkham Knight, but.
I'm hearing Arkham Knight as runner-up.
I'm thinking Arkham Knight as runner-up.
I can live with that.
Okay.
But here's the thing: is that we all of these games, they're really on here for a reason.
Yeah.
They have
exactly. That's the
They're here for a reason. Yeah. They're all good.
There's no bad ending on the final list that we have.
Yeah.
So I'm saying runner-up Arkham Knight and winner Bloodborne.
Order 1886.
1886.
That's it.
Sure. All right. I can live with that.
Favorite ending 1886. Runner-up is Spelunky.
Cool.
We're only at 46 minutes. We're doing good.
We're doing good.
This is a 4-hour podcast today, everybody.
Hey, man.
If we need to have a part 1 and 2,
this is game of the year, guys. All right, we're moving on to another spoiler category. Favorite twist. So we can delete Metal Gear Solid 5 off this list immediately.
Just get rid of that.
Nominees are Arkham Knight, Bloodborne.
Wait. So... And I know that for Striker's sake, we probably shouldn't spoil the twist. I actually, while I hate Chapter 2, I like the twist.
Are you fucking kidding me?
In a way, I do. I think that it could have been a lot better.
I will fight to the death for this game, and I can't even stand with you on that one.
Hold on. Arkham Knight, Bloodborne, Xenoblade Chronicles X, Until Dawn, Metal Gear Solid 5 for the favorite twist. I say we nix Metal Gear Solid 5, unless you really think that it should win.
I want him to have his say.
I don't think it's the best twist Metal Gear's had, and I think that it actually does a lot of damage to the series.
It does immense damage to the series.
It does so much fucking damage to the series. But at the same time, if you really put some thought behind it, Kojima is doing a thing. He's given a love letter to the fans with that.
So, how? Explain that, because it's just a fucking happenstance. This guy was there and happened to accept.
So are we gonna do it? Are we gonna do it?
Okay, no. What were you about to say?
Well, I was gonna go for it.
Are we just gonna do it?
This
one is up to
this
you.
This one is up to you.
Just do it.
All
right. So at the end of Ground Zeroes, the helicopter is blown up. Right, and Big Boss goes into a coma and everything. It's revealed that you are not playing as Big Boss the entire game. You are playing as a medic that takes shrapnel in front of Big Boss, the real Big Boss, and then they, like, through this coma, Ishmael, the guy who's there, is actually Big Boss. And through this coma, like, somehow they convince you that you are Big Boss, and then you go, because who is looking for, like, the government's looking for the actual Big Boss. So this is Big Boss's way of getting out and going to, like, start a real thing. And so basically, your whole journey through this game creating Mother Base is just a ruse to take light off the real Big Boss.
So who's actually doing the real Metal Gear Solid 5 in the background that the game, the previous games hinted at?
Yeah.
This still happens, but some other guy's doing it.
It cheapens the entire fucking game.
Okay, hold on.
Let me just say what part about this I like first.
Okay.
So the point of the game is that, because you create your character. Mm-hmm. You create the medic.
Yep.
You are Big Boss. Kojima was basically trying his best to put you in the shoes of the player.
There's so many better ways to do it.
It could be much better, but it is the most risky, and it's really stupid, and it's really corny, and it hurts. And when I saw it, I wanted to kill myself. But
to me, playing the game after playing this grind of a game that takes fucking hours and hours,
it was a slap.
Nothing you did mattered.
It was a slap to the face with a giant dick.
The whole game doesn't matter, basically.
Basically.
So it was. There are so many horrible things wrong with it.
I hate that.
Mm-hmm. So many horrible things wrong with it. But after giving it a lot of thought.
Keep talking about the ending and not the game. Because that comes later on. Just making clear.
Oh, yeah. No.
There's
a conversation there, too.
After giving it a lot of thought, I really didn't hate it as much as I thought it would. Artistically, that I'm going to remember for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's true.
But
it's memorable.
For a good reason, though?
Probably not. Yeah. But not everything in art has to be a good reason.
And a favorite doesn't have to be.
True. I feel like that lives up to Kojima's standard of making art. There's a statement there.
There's
a statement of putting Big Boss as you. You are the player. It's like a thank you note to you. Like the whole time.
To me, it's a note that just open up and it just is blank.
Yeah, it's just
to me, it's an envelope that you get in the mail and you open it up and
there's
just
anthrax.
There's just a fart in there. It just smells like a fart.
So a fart baseball.
You open up the.
Yeah. So the whole point of every single Metal Gear game, and you can find a point where every game does this, is deconstructing, if that's even a word. A hero. It's the action hero.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And heroism is like a facade in this game. It's this thing that every player knows and loves Solid Snake as this hero every time they get into game.
Mm-hmm.
Big Boss. But in the end, it's just an icon. And every single Metal Gear game
Snake
takes a different look from a different angle, and it'll never do the same thing again. They'll never make a Metal Gear Solid 5 where you see the same perspective you saw in 2 or 4. Mm-hmm. It had to be completely different once again, and it had to throw the player...
3 did it best.
Back, by far and away. Absolute best. And 2 did the twist better. But did all the twists
3 better. Was like deconstructing the Patriot hero.
Yeah.
But at least, like, I know that Kojima had guts, and if it didn't totally fall apart in the second half... Like, I feel like Kojima just got kicked off the production team, and then they had all this stuff, and they just made Chapter 2 with whatever they could.
I feel, though, that if Chapter 2 was even, like, better, if it had some of the things that we wanted, it would have been even worse when you got this
Well, they could have led into it better.
Chapter 2 had one of my favorite moments in the whole game.
Chapter 2, it had an incredible... And I won't spoil that for Stryker, because you should...
You should still play the game.
You should still play the game.
I will.
Because there's still a couple moments. There's also... But the worst part about it is that there is more to the ending that's actually bullshit.
Yeah. Is there a game that you would rather eliminate off this list?
Yeah, what do you want to eliminate, Johnny?
Until Dawn.
Okay.
I don't know the twist.
Anyone want to fight for that?
I will fight for that.
You want to fight to keep it on the list?
I'm going to fight to keep Until Dawn on the list. Okay. I'm the one to put that on.
Sure. I thought it was a pretty decent twist, but...
Now, here's the thing. What are some of the main cliches in horror movies? Like, for the past 30 years, okay? Vampires, zombies, hacker slashers...
Teenage sex. Underage sex. Unprotected sex.
And that's what the game provides.
Butt
sex.
Missionary
guy sex. All kind of sex.
Lots of sex.
Just sex, yeah.
Circus carnival sex.
Mm-hmm. Well, circus.
Sure. Yeah, hell yeah.
Tilt a Whirl.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Hell yeah.
All right. Cool.
Comedy
sex.
Yeah.
What's so great about Until Dawn, as far as twist goes,
is there any sex?
It. Not really.
Well,
it presents itself as a little bit.
A little bit of sex.
It presents itself as a hacker slasher, and then it turns the game completely on its head with a mythology, a horror genre that really has been played with before. And I'm talking about Wendigos and their ugly, scary-looking motherfuckers.
Wait, Wendigos like snow beasts?
Yeah,
snow beasts, yeah. And these aren't like the Wendigos from the Marvel comics. This isn't a big bulky Hulk villain. These guys, they're the way they move is fucked up. The way they look is fucked up.
They look like Smiggles with longer arms.
Ugh,
that's unsettling.
It's also just a really
what's the twist
freaky,
though?
What's the twist?
So there are sort of there's like three. And so basically the game sets up and you're like in a Saw kind of setup where there's like people that are getting kidnapped and getting put in traps and let's play a game.
Mm-hmm.
And turns out it's
all wampas.
It's your friend. You have to like pick your girlfriend the girl you like or your buddy. And so naturally, okay, you're going to want to pick the buddy. And so...
I pick the girl.
If you pick the girl, she'll want to fucking kill you later. But anyway,
Seems like a reasonable response.
I beat the game and everybody.
Like a metaphor for life. No. I picked save. I chose to save the girl.
Oh right, yeah. So I picked to save the girl. If you don't pick to save the girl, the saw blade goes and cuts the other guy in half. Anyways, anyway, so that guy got cut in half. Really, he's been setting all this up the whole time at this mansion because, you're responsible. Your friends pranked his sister, which got her killed. All this in a flashback at the start of the game.
Okay.
So he's been going crazy and building all these traps, and so you find out pretty early on that he has been doing this, and you're like, oh shit, but this is very early on in the game, that's weird. Well, it turns out he never meant to hurt anybody, he's just been doing this to scare people, even though he hit a few people. But
that's the dumbest shit.
But then there's like
he's got problems though. He's got serious mental problems.
So
that's
so,
also executed.
So like they get rid of the saw thing. You're like, because you think it's gonna be like a saw game,
okay.
Or a slasher game. You're like, oh, okay.
And
so
it takes that cliche shit
also,
and turns it on its head.
What's cool though is that you pick your fear. You can pick like clowns or bugs and stuff like
oh,
when
wait,
you're getting
weird.
When you're getting interviewed in this dream sequence, and then they like carry that into the next part.
So
of the game.
Twist is that the guy. Set this whole thing up.
Yeah.
That's twist number one. Twist number two is that there's something really going on the mountain that's killing people, and there's
and it's the Wendigos.
There's
Wendigos.
This insane asylum where people were cannibalizing themselves and turning into these beasts. Wendigos are in folklore.
That's gross.
Wendigos are awesome pieces of folklore, and
great piece of ass. Wendigo.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad that the game handled Wendigos. Honestly, I didn't like how they looked. I don't like it when horror shows the monster too much. I like real like subtle mystery. They show the monster in great detail a lot in Until Dawn. That was to the point where I didn't think it was scary. I thought it was great fun though.
I really
liked Until Dawn in many ways.
I don't think that's a good twist.
My favorite twist of the year.
Yeah, it was okay.
My favorite twist was Arkham Knight. All right. I'm just gonna.
Can we take Until Dawn off this?
Wait, I want Stryker to explain. I want to hear Stryker talk about Arkham first. Is it the Joker reveal?
Well, see, there's a few twists in this game. There's the Joker reveal.
We should have.
I remember that. And I was
nominated.
Like, oh, you sons of
specific
bitches.
Specific twists. Yeah, we should have because Arkham Knight. Now I'm thinking about it. Has a few. The Joker reveal.
Mm-hmm.
There's Barbara Gordon.
Yeah.
Now that's the one I was talking about.
Pick one.
I want to pick Barbara Gordon.
Okay.
Because I think that was a bigger twist and more impactful to me and emotionally.
But she turned out to be alive in the end.
Yes. But I didn't know that. And it fucked me over.
Yeah.
I was really sad. It was just impactful. The way that you are standing at the window outside of like an operating room and she's inside and Joker... walks up and fucking
and
blasts
just does
her.
It. Yeah, that was
just
that,
kills her
that
right
left,
in front of you.
Yeah,
and,
I felt dead inside when
Batman
I saw it.
Batman was so vulnerable, and in as a character, you never see him like that. He like fell down into a heap on the ground, like outside of the window, because he just watched Barbara Gordon get executed by the Joker, and it was so violent and just like brutal that. It was like shocking. I mean, that was why the game got the
maturity. Guys, remember The Darkness?
Oh, dude, Come on, man. You asking me? Nagia Staccato?
Yeah. The reason why...
So did Batman just pull out a gun and kill himself and the demons?
Yeah.
He shot his grappling hook into his face and then jerked his head off. But that was impactful to me.
The reason why I picked Until Dawn, because I thought it was clever how it presented itself as one genre and then went in a completely different direction.
I do like that how it was a blender of horror ideas. Yes.
I loved that.
So was Until Dawn your favorite twist?
You've made a good case.
So I'm going to, since we don't, I don't want to take too much time.
No, eliminate something.
Here's the thing. I want to explain one.
I want to put Until Dawn as a runner-up, and I will change my mind, and I will go with Arkham.
Okay.
So Xenoblade Chronicles.
Take Until Dawn off.
God damn it.
So Xenoblade Chronicles.
Okay.
Xenoblade Chronicles' main story isn't that great. The original game is. I mean, X, not so much. That being said, X is a great sci-fi. And you don't know this until chapter 5 or 6 out of 12. So about almost halfway through the main story. The game, you know, it just meanders. You don't really know what it's really about. Basically, humanity is on Earth. Did I explain this on the podcast
once? I don't think so. I know the basic story of it. Aliens come into your general vicinity, start fucking shit up, so you leave.
You've got this city on a ship, basically. It's in a little biodome. Ship blows up, biodome crashes into this new alien planet, and the biodome, you know, opens up, and it's a pre-built city, new Los Angeles. And so, you know, humanity is trying to get its new start on this planet. Aliens come down, start invading, whatever. There's this tower in the middle of New Los Angeles, and it's got, like, a percentage meter on it. And you don't really know what it is. But for whatever reason, every cutscene, the camera keeps turning to this percentage meter, and it keeps looking at it. It's 69%, 50%.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
420.
Sorry. 42.0%. So then...
What?
Then it starts to get...
That's not sexy.
Sorry. So then it starts to get, you know, lower and lower, and you don't really know what it is. Every time you do a mission, it's lower.
Oh, you told me about this, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking, me and my friend, we're trying to come up with what it could be. Like, they're not telling us. Is it their supplies? Is it... What is it? So, you know, you get to the episode 5 or 6 in the game, and you go to protect these retarded alien creatures... that's another story in itself that I will not explain. You get your arm sliced off. You create your own main character, and everybody has these weird eyes, these weird pupils, robotic-looking pupils, and I didn't know what was up with that. I thought they were just some cybernetic thing. Mm-hmm. But you get your arm sliced off, and it's got fucking, like, gears and cords and shit. You're a robot. So halfway through the game, you find out that you're a robot. I'm like, wow, I'm a robot? Holy shit.
Is everyone in your squad a robot?
And they're like, oh, you didn't know? Oh, you lost your memory, so you must not have known. They're like, yeah, you're a robot. You're like, oh. And it's like, oh, yeah, we're all robots. Every single person in this, you know, biodome thing, we're robots. That's how we got through basically, they're all in cryogenic freezing in this pod. And the pod got lost when the ship crashed. So the pod is somewhere in the planet. The aliens are searching for it to destroy it and kill their original bodies.
Sounds like Wrath of Khan.
Meanwhile, they've got all of their robotic forms that have... At the start of the game, they tell you, oh, you can jump or fall as far as you want. You can super jump. You can do all these powers and stuff. They tell you, like, it's casual. Like it's actually a part of the world. And I'm like, well, am I like Superman? Is the atmosphere making me do this? No, you're just a fucking robot. You can do all
these... So what's the meter? What's the meter?
The meter is your power. It's the power of all the robots.
See... Like that a lot.
Once that
goes
fucking, zero,
I think that's fucking
that's
rad.
Super interesting. Yeah, once that goes zero, they all shut down. So meanwhile, you know the aliens are after these bodies, and they could probably take them over and take over the host, or maybe kill it Matrix style, so your robot just drops and
so it's
dies.
Like a race against the aliens to find the bodies.
Which sounds super compelling. Unfortunately, the rest of the game's story isn't, but as a twist, that's one of my favorites I've ever seen.
I think it's a good guy.
I like
twist.
That. That's, I think that's really more great. Fascinating than Until Dawn.
It makes it go
Until
from...
Dawn.
It makes it go from a decent anime JRPG to, like, a good sci-fi game.
Yeah.
It was surprising. I love that part.
So are you okay with... I mean, are you making a case for that being over Arkham Knight, or is that the runner-up?
Is Bloodborne the...
Bloodborne. It's got a great
got
twist.
So we're not giving it twist.
Nah.
So...
So it's Arkham Knight, Barbara Gordon's Death, or Xenoblade Chronicles X, fucking robots.
Fucking robots.
I'm all for fucking robots.
I like the Xenoblade fucking
robots.
Twist.
I'm all for fucking robots. I'm all for fucking robots.
I'm totally down with the Arkham Knight twist.
I'm all for
awesome,
fucking robots.
I think that I think I might put the Xenoblade twist over the Arkham Knight twist just because I think that I really find that compelling. And I love the Arkham Knight twist, but I just think that that's a more very interesting, clever twist.
So I think that's great.
I think Arkham Knight's runner-up, Xenoblade Chronicles X.
That's it. Favorite twist, Xenoblade Chronicles X, fucking robots.
I do get why you put down Until Dawn, though, Phil, because I would have put it down, at least to discuss it, because it's cool.
Yeah, I mean,
it's my favorite part of the game is how you don't know what kind of a horror movie it's going to rip off of.
And it deserved to be talked about. This is our this is our 2015 year in review. So that sounds like an awesome twist.
That was my biggest takeaway.
I still would like to play it. You told me you'd let me have it forever.
I was joking, man.
Oh, well, that's pretty fucked up. All right.
Oh, well, yeah, this one has got a lot of stuff.
Yeah, we're moving on to Biggest Surprise. So that's a game that just we didn't expect to be very good or kind of just flew under the radar until it hit, and it was great. So we got Until Dawn, Life is Strange, Dying Light, Dirt Rally, Axiom Verge, Undertale, and Sunless Sea.
Can I make a case real quick for Dirt Rally?
Yes, you can.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot of games on this list that look really good. Some of them I haven't played. But I just want to say, for being a fan of the Dirt series and back in the Colin McRae Rally days as well, the games were built upon simulating rally racing, and it was a big emphasis. I mean, they were all about realism and the spirit of kind of the sport and everything like that. And everybody, you know, it had a niche fan base, but they really loved it for those reasons. And then the games kind of got away from that in like Dirt 1, 2, and 3, and sort of became more of like a bro-y type of they were still simulation based. They were definitely still simulation based, but just the atmosphere and stuff of them, they had like stunt courses and Ken Block's like stunt stuff and all that. It just kind of got away from the spirit of the franchise of just true rally racing. And then out of fucking nowhere, and let me paint this picture, literally the day before this game came out,
mm-hmm.
I don't remember who I was talking to, or maybe I just thought this to myself. I thought, I wonder when Codemasters is going to come out with a new Dirt game. Next day, they released Dirt Rally on Early Access.
Yeah, I remember that.
That's pretty nice.
Maybe it was you that I was talking
about. We were talking about on the podcast.
Yeah, that might have been
it. Came out, you'd mentioned it to me the day before, and then the next day we were doing like one of the first mm-hmm. podcasts that I was on. And we just kind of like looked at the news right before, like, oh, holy shit.
Now, since then, the game has had a bevy of updates and has also had a full-blown release and is coming to consoles soon, too. But it was released on Early Access. It's fantastic. It is exactly what everybody wanted the last few Dirt games to be. So while this is like a game that's small in scale, I mean, you got to understand for fans of the series, like, out of nowhere, seemingly, this beacon of hope just comes down from the sky. And it's everything that the fans wanted the series to be for the last several years.
It's also, I think, got Oculus support.
Yeah, it's got Oculus support. It's got amazing graphics. It runs incredibly well. It's fucking hard as hell.
I could be wrong on that, though.
I'm pretty sure you're right, actually.
I know that there's a few really realistic car games recently that happened.
Yeah. Let's say Dirt Rally stays on the list for now. I'm going to nominate Dying Light and Undertale.
You want to get rid of those?
Yeah.
Dying Light and Undertale?
Yeah.
Dying Light was cool. I think it was kind of...
I don't think it was a surprise, though.
I think it was everything it was supposed to be.
Yeah. Game, though.
Yeah, there's a lot of press, and it's like, you know, it's kind of just like... kind of a way more polished Dead Island.
Yeah, I put it in the same category as like Mad Max, where mm-hmm. you could say it flew under the radar for certain people, but in a lot of ways it was what it was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
It just came out, it was good, it was fun, it was, some people really liked it.
What about Undertale, Johnny?
I think that by definition, Undertale is technically the most surprising game for everybody, but I will remove it because I don't feel any of us are compelled enough
to
argue.
I think we just need to remember that.
I love what I've played so far.
This is our biggest surprise. So,
I'm going to advocate for a game we haven't talked about yet, Life is Strange.
I knew this was coming.
Mm-hmm. I knew that... So the studio, the French studio made... Remember Me.
Yeah.
And I didn't think that looked very good. And I had no idea that when they announced their next game, it would kick all of Telltale's lineup's ass.
Yeah.
And in fact, I would say that, like, every episode ending from, like, episode 3 to 5 was my favorite twist. There were, like, 3 massive twists that turned the story on its head, but I didn't want to talk about them or spoil them. So I'm going to list them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I thought Xenoblade should win anyway.
Yeah.
In a way.
That's a good-ass twist.
Life is Strange is really compelling, really fucking corny, especially if you're starting it off. There's some really bad dialogue.
Yeah.
You got to be in the right mood for it. You really do. Because I was thinking back on it, and I was just totally in the mood for it when I played it. And I'm thinking back on it now, I'm like, man, if I played that at some other points in time, I might not have liked it really that much.
Just hit you in the right spot.
Yeah.
Right in the leader.
And I think that a lot of people could enjoy it, but it could also come off as really stupid. So I have no idea who to recommend it to, other than, like, everyone.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I had no idea that I'd like the game half as much as I did.
So, okay. Let's get Axiom Verge off there. Because while it was a surprise and why I loved it, I don't think
you could almost argue that all indie games are a surprise because they don't have a lot of press.
They don't have a lot of PR anyway. And you know, it's not our favorite. So
yeah, that's fair.
When I get down to this list for me is Until Dawn and Life is Strange, I think.
And for me, really, Until Dawn it was the biggest surprise because I hadn't heard that much about it until maybe like a few days before. I bought it, didn't know what I was expecting, and I found out myself really enjoying it. And that's basically all there is to say about that. But the story that Stryker told is pretty damn compelling.
Until Dawn, I played the year before. I went to PAX. Sony actually had a massive booth, and there was marketing for it. I think a little more than people thought. Just for some reason, the gaming news sites didn't talk about it much, but yeah, they put in PR.
I knew about Until Dawn vaguely for a long time before it
came out. If you follow the gaming world, it was one of those games that you hear
the name,
you get chirps of, you hear the name,
but for some reason, you don't feel compelled to.
Yeah, play. And then all of a sudden it comes out because it's not like the sexiest game to for press and stuff. I don't think it was that kind of game. But then when it came out, it was huge.
It was really confusing because you didn't know it was trying to be a corny B-movie horror flick.
I mean, I know people that, like, never play games that played Until Dawn. Like, they,
it was a success.
I think
that in many ways, where Until Dawn succeeded, Life is Strange was, because Life is Strange had more surprising societal value. Like,
here's what I'm going to say. I think that Life is Strange wins this category. I think that both of Until Dawn and Dirt Rally, while surprising, didn't set
the
world on fire like Life is Strange did.
I don't love Until Dawn that much.
If I was in high school and played Life is Strange, the way it deals with, like, bullying and depression and suicide and stuff, like, it would have really hit me. Or other high schoolers. Yeah. Like, that...
I'm with you on this one, Johnny. I think that Life is Strange probably deserves the nod.
Can we say Life is Strange wins it and Dirt Rally runner-up? I just don't feel like Until Dawn was that big of, like, it was like, holy shit, because it, like, people are, like, saying...
Let's just remember, Dirt Rally had literally no press before it came out. It just was out.
It was just like...
Codemasters was like, hey, Dirt Rally's out.
Oh, it's great.
And it's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
So. Which kind of proves a marketing point that you can get away with that and it'll still sell.
Mm-hmm.
It'll sell. Who knew? Who knew you didn't have to shove a game up someone's ass for them to know it's there?
Years.
Well, for me, you do.
Yeah, well,
that's different. So I guess that leaves us with the biggest surprise being Life is Strange and Dirt Rally as the runner-up.
Mm-hmm.
So... Now we move on to favorite character.
Ooh, this is a tough one. There's so many variables.
This was one of the ones that we combined a couple different categories. We combined, obviously, just our favorite character, but it also encompasses, you know, what we thought was the best VO, the best writing, that kind of stuff.
This is hard for me.
It is hard.
I only want one to win. There's only one here that I... Well, maybe two. It's Siri. I want Siri to win. I think Siri, hands down, is the best character.
Let's take off Rico.
Rico's I love you, Rico.
I do love Rico.
It's okay.
No, Rico's a serious thing.
We
though,
can take I him think. Off, but we can do it. We can stay nice. Of, like,
let's not take Rico off.
Yeah, he's always been the same, though.
Like, but that's all he needs to be.
Yeah, that's true.
He's just Rico.
He's a fucking Just Cause 3, Rico.
Oh, shit. I'm not that far into it yet.
He's a fucking just like...
No, Phil, you know everything you need
you
to
have
know.
You have no... The character of all Just Cause games.
Okay, oh, here's the thing. I feel like Rico has came into his own a lot more than in 3 than in 2 and especially 1.
He's a parody.
And I feel like this time...
The type of parody that he is, too, is so... Polish in the way it's written that it's fucking amazing. Yeah, I love Polish humor. It's so bad.
There's some there were some laugh out loud parts that were at like the funny parts.
I really like the doctor lady.
She's funny.
In 3?
Yeah.
She's cool. Funny.
Can we delete? Bye-bye. I'm gonna delete both the Fallout 4 leads.
Yes.
Okay. That's fair.
I have no attachment to them.
Yeah. Now, these don't have to be specifically like compelling characters or blah blah. You know, they just your favorite character, Phil. So okay. I mean that. Like Rico, for example, he is the most like shallow character on this list, obviously.
But I goddamn love him.
But he just Rico, man. He just wants to blow shit up.
That's all he cares about. Blowing shit up. That's fucking it.
Can I tell you
a funny thing?
In the loading screen, there's like the little tips and stuff like that.
And they say the U.S. Army doesn't condone killing civilians, but this is a game, so why does it matter?
Well, yeah, like things like that. I wish they'd... No, I don't.
That's from
Spec Ops.
Yeah.
So, one of the tips in this game says... It said, anything that you see that's red is owned by the blah 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 and can probably be blown up. Or as Rico likes to call them, chaos objects. It's like... It doesn't give... I just love that the game it's so unapologetic about ridiculous things, and it gives context to everything in the most ridiculous ways, and it doesn't care.
Yeah,
it's just like the silliest stuff.
It makes me want to get back into it because I played for maybe like first 3 hours or an hour and a half of it.
So
and then...
you get some really good upgrades that make it even more fun. Yeah. But,
can we take Geralt off?
I'm gonna put Geralt. I'm gonna explain why he's my favorite character. Look, we all love badasses. We all love, but every good badass character.
Okay, then can we take Quiet off?
Get rid of Quiet. Rip that bitch.
So we got Siri, Geralt, and Rico.
Hell yeah! Anyway,
hell yeah! Phil loves that sound.
We've got Geralt, Rico, and Siri.
Jack off.
Go fuck yourself.
He's just a watcher in her prison cell and. Feverishly
Yep. That's terrible.
Well, that's what you do. That's
not what I do. It is terrible.
It is.
Yeah, you did, what do I do?
Well, all right. Well,
all right.
Where do we go from here?
Can I?
Yeah, defend
make
Geralt.
A case for Geralt.
This is so hard because it's like favorite.
It is really hard.
This is my favorite character. Okay. Because, like, every good badass character has a human interior. But this year, I think Geralt is the best example. It's not just who he is that presents that interior. It's the whole... It's what he's known for. As a Witcher, people are scared of this guy. And, you know, you almost have cause to be scared of him, too, if you don't really know that much about him. Underneath that is a very empathetic, very relatable guy.
One of the most
empathetic people
in the entire world.
Yeah, he's actually one of the most empathetic people in the entire world, and all he wants to do.
A good dad.
Yeah. All he wants to do is get drunk with his friends. He's got this crazy girlfriend that drives him insane, and I'm just talking about Yennefer because I chose Yennefer. She knows him more than anyone knows him, and he fucking hates that though. He's got relationship problems.
He's kind of pussy whipped.
Yeah,
he's one of the most like real, relatable video game characters I have
ever
seen.
And he's a very real. He's not real badass. He's a real badass, but he's a very real badass.
Realistic.
Yes, realistic.
He's also the way he is in The Witcher 3. because he's gone under so many developments. He is so fleshed out and developed by the time you get there. And then by the time you get to the end of The Witcher 3, he develops so much more.
I mean, he's got fucking books. There's,
and it's he's to the point where by the end of the game, his decision to shelf his job and settle
source material
makes his character and where his character goes, like, arguably perfect.
I also really liked specifically the performance of, like, the voice actor and motion capture of his... There's a lot of subtlety to some of his expressions and the way he talks and his sort of sarcasm and stuff that, you know, he's a very dry character because by their nature, the witchers are that way. They're not as emotional as regular humans and everything, but his character has a lot of subtlety, a lot of nuance to his performances that I really liked. And there's some specific, like, quests and dialogues in the game that, but I really loved Ciri in the game, too.
Ciri is one of the most surprising and one of my favorite characters, because...
Sure wish my save wasn't deleted.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, I found it. Did I tell you?
Oh, what?
It was in my fucking mailbox.
Fuck!
Yeah.
Shit.
I threw it away again, though.
Damn it. What format was it in?
Was
it just a bunch of...
VCRs?
It was in
an actual, like, VCR.
Yeah, it was saved onto, like, 10 VCRs.
Fuck, they must... Oh, man.
This is weird.
Those are in your mailbox?
Yeah, so...
Are we eliminating Rico? I don't want to.
I love Rico, but I want to eliminate him because he's not new this year. And he's not... Well, neither is
Geralt. Ciri's really the only...
I'm
talking about favorite character this year. We're not talking about favorite new character.
I would argue that Geralt is so much better than...
I think Ciri and Geralt are both better characters than Rico.
Oh, yeah.
That being said,
how do you argue a favorite, then?
Because we're talking about favorite. We're not talking about best.
Right.
We're talking about something that I'm like, fuck yeah, like, this guy makes me laugh. This is... Like, I've just felt...
I just like it.
I just like Rico.
I like him, too, but I mean, when it comes down to how much I know... Rico's a cartoon character. He's a character. He's a character.
I love cartoons.
He is a symbol
of... Dexter's Lab was on this list, I'd pick him.
Johnny Bravo had a video game. First off, it would be...
Atrocious.
So bad.
It would be abysmal.
But I would finish it. Like, twice.
Okay.
Okay, so Rico...
And he's the nude code, too.
Rico probably took, like, a 1,000th of the amount of thought process, and you could summarize Rico as a symbol of 80s action flicks and Polish humor and racial stereotypes.
That's the best fucking description you've ever given for any... The 80s action hero, Polish humor.
Racial stereotypes.
Name a goddamn character better than Rico.
The serious guy.
Alright, okay.
Character.
Listen, I think Siri's my favorite character.
Okay.
The runner-up...
I think we're fighting for runner-up right now.
Yeah.
Am I the only one on Rico?
You are. You better be. God, please, Strucker, don't let me down.
I'm with Geralt on runner-up.
You're going Geralt on runner-up?
I'm good.
Have it.
Okay.
Philip can't appreciate dumb stuff. Philip only likes the most bleeding-edge art that he's ever seen.
Or blood and guts.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Your problem with Just Cause is there's no gore.
Yeah. Philip likes metal. Alright, favorite character is Ciri with Geralt being the runner-up.
Ciri deserves it.
Ciri deserves it.
That's great.
I love Ciri.
I
wanted what was best for her.
Yeah.
There was so many surprising moments where you... Because, like, I didn't know what to expect through the trailers and stuff with her.
I didn't want to see her naked. That's how much I loved her.
Yeah.
That speaks balance.
Yes. Yeah.
But at the same time, there was that one part where she's, like, at that place...
You've drawn her.
Savage.
You've drawn her getting fucked by Geralt.
Oh, no, but he's like kind of a father figure.
Yeah, that's why you drew her.
No. I wouldn't do that.
No. Didn't the stable boy that liked Ciri kind of remind you of Phil in a way?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was about to sleep with him.
She was.
Phil's fantasies. Just
wow. So you need to find your Siri. She's out there.
You do, man.
I guarantee she's out there.
I actually really liked that part that while Siri wasn't sexualized at all, it made her feel like she had just, like, come of age prior to this part of her journey.
She just felt like a normal
girl.
She's
like, yeah. And it felt very real. And like, I was worried that they'd either sexualize her or make her, like, too much of a daughter thing. And they just found the perfect in-between. Like, no game does that.
They made her just a normal girl.
Yeah, they wrote her like a normal,
imagine
well-written
that.
Human being.
Yep. She was a human.
All right. Moving on. Next category is favorite OST or original soundtrack.
This is exciting.
We've got, we've got Crypt of the NecroDancer, Witcher 3, I Am Bread. Fuck you, it's great. We'll play some. Axiom Verge, Halo 5, Undertale, Sunless Sea, Bloodborne, and Xenoblade Chronicles X.
Where's NBA 2K16? DJ Premier!
Okay, I'm gonna say get Halo 5 off this list.
Wait, didn't they have Marty Robbins? Marty O'Donnell?
Chris O'Donnell? Marty O'Donnell is his name.
Did they have
Chris O'Donnell? They had him in Batman.
They didn't have him
for Halo 5?
I don't think so.
I listened to. I did a little bit.
I
did the research.
No, it was 343. Yeah, there was a huge Bungie falling out, right?
Also, it was 343.
No,
he's never.
Oh, that was Destiny. He fell out.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it was Destiny.
And I thought he was still doing Halo.
Fact check, but I'm pretty sure he didn't.
Okay, so I don't care what you keep, but I'm going to explain why it was my favorite.
And Halo 5 was your favorite OST?
Mm-hmm. I went through and did some research, and I listened to some music. Even some of the games that I haven't played, because this is the music here. All right? And I'm going to do my best to explain why I picked Halo 5. The main theme has this 10-minute build-up, kind of slowly but surely hinting at music from the past.
He did it.
Did he really?
Marty Robbins.
Nice.
Wait, what?
Marty O'Donnell.
Oh, okay. And it's different, but you know it's Halo.
That's not...
Halo 5, $44.99.
All right.
And then it builds up. Let me confirm it. And then completely explodes into the old theme, and it's very emotional, and I really loved it.
There are some really, really good moments where the music is used. But throughout, it's good. It's never bad.
Okay.
It's not as memorable as a lot of the other ones on this list for me.
That's fine. So I again I didn't I wish I've been able to play I wish I played Halo 5. I didn't. But I would have personally picked a Halo 5 with Xenoblade Chronicles X as my runner-up, but I don't mind what decision we make here.
Okay.
River, I want to know your favorite. I'm very curious.
So I'm going to toss up here.
I guess we should get rid of a few.
Maybe yeah, we first. Should get rid of a few. So I'm going to say Halo 5 is off.
No, I goofed. He's not. He didn't do Halo 5.
Yeah.
I saw, like, this tweet here, and I thought it said that he was teasing stuff about Halo 5. But
Johnny, it's gotten to the point where I'm rooting for you to get one of these things right, because you keep...
You always fuck up, John.
cutting
Halo 5.
Undertale had a great soundtrack, but once again,
I'm good with quick cuts.
I like that quick cut, Johnny.
How's Xenoblade Chronicles? You love it.
Xenoblade Chronicles soundtrack is by a famous anime composer who does really over-the-top stuff. He did the really popular, like, Attack on Titan soundtracks and stuff. They've got occasional vocalists chiming in.
Is it Japanese metal?
It's very, you know, very Lord of the Rings choir-ish stuff, but with rock drums in the background. That's what I remember hearing.
There's a lot of Xenoblade's soundtrack is heavy on. There's a lot of synth. There's a lot of electronic vibes.
Like,
there's a lot of very sci-fi. There's sometimes a little bit of Mass Effect coming in there.
When I hear synth, I just remember Blade Runner.
There's a lot of synth-heavy stuff, but there's a lot of rock ballads during the battles. But the thing is that you just tried to describe it with one way, but if you listen to this whole soundtrack, all 50 goddamn songs, there's so much diversity, and there's so many silly songs in this game. Like, when you're walking around the city, you just hear this beat, and these guys going, oh, yeah,
Oh, like you. Tom the hot dog salesman?
And it just lives. and then when it's daytime, that's when it's nighttime in New LA. And when it's daytime, there's like just this soul lady just doing some soul vibes going on. It's
pretty good.
And then, but then in combat, there's this Japanese lady who's singing in English, and it's just really powerful. She's like, she does like kind of a yell singing with heavy violins and just wide instrumentation. It's just epic and ridiculous. It's also so loud that it drowns out the dialogue and stuff. Like, it's hilariously, like, good. It's really very entertaining. For a super long game, though, it's not simple enough. So by the time you get, like, 80 hours in, you're kind of banging your head against the wall when you're hearing, ooh, you.
Yeah.
But it's as a, the amount of work they put into it, it's surprising and ridiculous.
I kind of felt that way about Witcher. I love the soundtrack for The Witcher, but there wasn't enough variety to the point where I got sick of the main.
I've never been a huge fan of the orchestration and like the oral choices that they. I know it fits with the stuff, but mm-hmm. I've just never been too drawn to the music in The Witcher.
Super memorable to me.
Yeah, it's not.
I loved it in The Witcher. There's but not enough to.
There's not a lot of like. There's obviously the main. There's the main theme and everything, but there's not a lot of themes that you can.
There's
not
for that.
Okay. Yeah,
to me, there's nothing in The Witcher that stood out as something that I will remember forever.
But to its credit,
even for this.
To its credit, when I listen to it, I don't think to myself, oh, they're trying to do something like Lord of the Rings. You know,
no, they're definitely doing their own thing. I just don't think it's all that great.
It works, fine. But it works wonderfully for the game. It enhances the game a lot. I wouldn't say it's my favorite.
I would be fine deleting Witcher from this list.
Yeah. Me too.
Is everyone cool with that?
Yeah,
that's cool.
Johnny,
you made a great case for Xenoblade.
I'm okay eliminating Axiom Verge. It's cool as hell. It's cool as fucking hell.
Yeah,
it's a lot of really deep like sub bass and like weird.
I've heard
just weird
like
noises.
A couple songs from it.
It's cool.
Pretty cool.
It's cool as hell.
Crypt of the Necro Dancer. I played
you motherfucker! If you try to delete this shit, I'm gonna kill you.
I like the soundtrack.
It's Crypt so of the good.
Dancer. I fucking love the conga boss and stuff.
It's
like
such
that.
A Danny Baranowski. He did the soundtrack for like Super Meat Boy. He's done a lot of
that
stuff. I can't even remember what he's all done. But Crypt of the Necro Dancer has some of the best electronic music I have ever heard anywhere.
Better than Hotline Miami, because I don't think so. I like Crypt of the Necro Dancer.
Dude, like, the thing is, like, Hotline Miami is just a bunch of licensed tracks. Crypt of the Necro Dancer is all, like, music made for this game that ties in directly.
They licensed?
They're licensed. You can find any of them on YouTube. They're all licensed tracks.
You can find Necro Dancer.
I know, but like this is like made for this game. It ties in directly to the gameplay, obviously.
No, Hotline Miami songs weren't made for the game.
No, they're. I've looked up a bunch of them. There's one called like El Cuervo by Daisuke and stuff like that. But
Daisuke,
yeah,
classic.
Anyways, I think Crypt of the Necro Dancer stays.
Johnny, make a case.
And guys, like, if we need to. We have YouTube. We can pull up some songs.
Yeah. I want to hear something from Crypt of the Necro Dancer.
I got it.
Well, laptop speaker.
Because I actually have that soundtrack on my phone. Okay. Locally.
Because I'm just not... When you... There's so many... when I hear electronic...
Striker, you might not like it.
I'm saying... I say that off the top. But I'm going to pull this up for you. And see what we can do.
I think it works wonderfully for the gameplay.
I've heard songs from Xenoblade Chronicles, so I kind of have an idea. Why wouldn't I like this?
Some of it gets kind of dubstep-y. Eventually.
For the context of the game and the tempo, because it's got to be really heavy on tempo.
It's got to have a real strong backbeat, because the way you play the game, you play it to the beat. But... listen to this theme. It's so good. Oh, it's coming in.
I love this.
That's great.
That is awesome. I really love this.
Yeah.
Just wait for the drop, Phil.
I'm just kidding.
Get through the drop.
The drop, is that what they rap?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. No, dude. You're so racist.
Alright,
I'm going to keep this one on here for now.
I mean, keep it on there.
Yeah.
I love it.
Have you ever pulled open a key gen?
Huh?
Like when you pirate a game?
Yeah, they all sound the same.
They all sound like that. Yeah,
or any crack.
Do you ever just like leave it playing for like 20 minutes and just dance?
I download this.
I just want to dance.
There's a reason why I have this on my phone locally. Because I always want to listen to it. It's good driving music. Dude, I download Reloaded torrents all the time just to listen to their fucking crack music. Anyways.
If you want to know what cocaine is like, yeah, just listen to some key gen jams.
Take Axiom Verge off. I'm fine with taking Axiom Verge off.
I'm fine with taking Sunless Sea off. It's wonderfully atmospheric and fits the game perfectly, but it's not something that you can wow. I mean, it draws you in really well.
What do we feel about Bloodborne? Because I'm having a hard time remembering.
So there are three songs in Bloodborne that win it for me in a way.
Okay.
I mean, or at least like, most of the songs in Bloodborne are like Demon Souls or Dark Souls or whatever. Mm-hmm. Whereas lots of really heavy, just brutal boss music.
Yeah.
Just ridiculous operatic stuff sung in a made-up language.
Yeah.
By a very talented singer. Lots of heavy strings, just ripping on the strings, yep, and it's just terrifying, and it builds horror. But that kind of starts to sound the same. So that is where I wouldn't normally put Bloodborne ahead. But Bloodborne ahead is ahead of the rest of the series by three songs. One of them, Ebrietas, Daughter of the Cosmos, that boss fight. She's this cosmically summoned princess demon boss thing is sitting in it's a side boss. You can find her. She's the hardest boss in the game. She's this colossal fucking thing. And she's just sitting there. She's not hostile. You have to attack her first because you need to kill her. So you're kind of a dick.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as she plays, she just turns around because you like kind of shoot her from a range distance and she starts to slowly come towards you.
This is it?
Yeah.
And this starts playing. And you kind of realize the mistake you've made as you've barely chipped your health, and she's like, oh, you're fucked now.
She turns around because she's facing away from you. That's the best part. And she doesn't do anything until
you see her after you shoot her.
Oh, God. Yeah, I remember that really well.
And so there are these horns.
This is really good.
That come in the background. And
that's terrifying and depressing and condemning.
Give her a minute.
Yeah,
that's so good. The distant that's really French good. Horn,
yeah.
It's just like, oh, it's so haunting.
I remember that really well now.
And so it's not like the tense boss where you're like, yeah, and you're just adrenaline and terrified.
You're just like, fuck, I want to get
out. It's like, I am fucked. I am in this weird, cosmically, just, this world is not right, and I shouldn't be here. Yeah. Like, that's what that music is. You fucked up, you should not be here.
And the thing about her is she's so, that boss is so out of the way that you kind of feel that way too. That lends itself to that feeling of you shouldn't be here. Like, I came here by accident. The developers didn't mean for me to come here.
Yeah, and then the second one that I love is Garmin. The boss fight when you're fighting
Garmin
is so enchanting. It's really beautiful. And then I believe the credits music was very good. So those three, or was it the boss fight with the fucking wet nurse? Remember Murgo's Wet Nurse?
Yeah.
That had a cool song, too. So Bloodborne's soundtrack was better than the normal excellent Souls soundtrack.
I'd forgotten how good it was.
So it's just most of them were very Soulsy, but then there were these ones that were really...
Out of this world?
Yeah.
So we're talking...
I met the composer.
So Crypt of the Necrodancer, Bloodborne, and Xenoblade are kind of our three finalists.
Let me play you this.
Yeah.
Okay. Shit.
Oh, no.
Shit. Never mind.
Hold on. I am Bread.
But I'm cool. I am Bread. OST.
Oh, God.
I am Bread. Fuck off. It's a stupid game. It doesn't mean it has bad music. Ooh.
Ooh, baby.
Every song.
I love this.
Every song.
I really like this a lot.
It's good.
Are we...
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's good.
It's so good, dude. And then when the drums come in...
I want to hear the drums.
Let me play you one more. I'll play you a different one.
God, that's so good.
Yep.
love it. It's very
I like Phil, it. You don't like it because it's fucking happy and no one's screaming.
Yeah.
Oh.
Ew.
No, it's great. Yeah.
Well, I actually...
it's not good now. It's great.
I
love that.
It's so good.
I like that better than Crypt of the Necrodancer.
I do too.
It's more... I've heard...
I think I do too.
See, I Crypt of the Necrodancer is great for a game, but like I've heard music like that before. Like,
true.
You know, I listen totally to true. Artists that do that kind of thing. This is so upbeat. Like, this could just make the game outside.
Yep. It kind of does, honestly.
That's
cool. I like that
a lot.
This is,
you know,
this is my favorite song ever.
Almost
my favorite song.
I just want to prance through a field of tulips.
All of
that's
it.
That's like proper for a Mega Man legend.
I just feel like I'm gonna walk down the street on a sunny day and just
all of
just say birds. Hello to Jor.
All of the fucking music in this game is just like every time I hit a new level, I was just this is wonderful.
I would play a game for this music.
I kind of did.
Yeah.
Because I didn't. So.
God, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
I'm up for that. I'm up for that being the winner. Like that.
I kind of am, too.
I'm
fine. I'm fine with...
I can cut Xenoblade because... I mean, I can't pick off, like, a highlight song that I love so much to... Like, I feel like the songs I like in Bloodborne I like more than all the ones in Xenoblade. But Xenoblade's soundtrack is worth noting. It's ridiculous.
So Bloodborne runner-up?
Bloodborne runner-up.
Okay. I Am Bread wins.
Fucking whatever.
That's great.
That's
winner I Am Bread.
I'm not even mad.
Favorite OST is...
Just convinced us in, like, seconds.
Dude, I knew there was something there. Favorite OST is I Am Bread with the runner up.
I love that pick
of Bloodborne. I do too. It's great. Just great.
That was fun.
And we're gonna move on next to favorite world, and we've got a hell of a lot of nominees on this one. So we've got Just Cause 3, The Witcher 3, Fallout 4, MGS 5, Bloodborne, Mad Max, I Am Bread, Wolfenstein: The Old Blood, Undertale, and Sunless Sea. Let's take off Wolfenstein.
I want to take off Metal Gear Solid.
Kay.
Great world. I don't think... I mean, the game was great. The world was not.
Contribute to the world, yeah.
No. The game is great. The world is not.
So this is... So in Favorite World, we're talking specifically more about the like, actual map.
Yes.
Yes. So, I'll say take Metal Gear Solid 5 off. Take Wolfenstein off.
If Wolfenstein...
Unless you have something to say about Metal Gear Solid 5's world.
I have nothing to say about that.
Okay.
All right. So, if Wolfenstein... the New Order was here. I would actually keep this because I really love the world they've created. Old Blood, though, like I feel like that's cheating to bring in the DLC. It's like, all right, it's back.
It was, but it wasn't like DLC. It was like an actual standalone thing.
You're right.
But that being said, I don't think that it stands with some of these games.
Just Cause 3, love the world.
Yeah, it feels a little samey.
It does.
It's samey, but slightly better.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not my favorite world of the year at all. I'm just saying that I like it is worth mentioning because I like the fact that they took the open world aspect and just kind of made it all bright and sunshiny and flowers everywhere, a lot of colors, and then you're just blowing shit up.
The weird Eurasia thing in 2 just did not work for me because 1 was incredibly colorful, incredibly upbeat. 3 looks like it went back to that, which I love.
Yeah.
More fields of flowers and grains that you can just ride your bike through.
It's fun. But I honestly don't mind getting rid of it. It's worth mentioning. But...
I put I Am Bread on there because I love little guy in a huge normal world. Like army men
like
stuff,
Chibi
like
Robo.
Lord style stuff.
I love that shit.
Sarge's
Heroes.
I grew up with the army men.
Oh fuck yeah!
Oh god!
Oh fuck yeah!
Do you know how much River and I played Sarge's Heroes?
It's unlimited.
I remember hearing people talk about it so much when I finally got it.
You guys,
but also another guy I hung out with.
You didn't hang out with fucking anyone.
I had a tub.
Just kidding. I really sucked at it.
Oh, army men, plastic army men. I just would. My room would be covered in a sea of army men, and as soon as I got Army Men 1, and then eventually 2, like in Army Men 2, when you start and you're in the kitchen, and you're fighting on the fucking oven,
yeah,
like that just as a like an 8 year old, that just blew my mind. Yeah. My toys are so much more fun.
It just like unlocks your imagination.
Yeah.
When you play it as a kid, it's like yeah.
Great.
So we can take that off, though.
Army Men is in Favorite World.
Okay, yeah.
Army Men, Sergeant Heroes.
I Am Red, take it off. I say take off Mad Max.
Yeah, we know the Mad Max world. Like, this isn't new. They did a great job. I think it's worth mentioning that they did a surprisingly good job crafting the world. They handled it with great tact.
They did a fantastic job. And I want to say this game is worth talking about because there are some... You know, the game is covered in sand and dust, and you're like in a desert wasteland. It's the Mad Max world. But there is some, like, absolutely stunning scenery in this game.
Absolutely.
And there
are,
like, the skybox in this game, probably one of the most amazing skyboxes ever.
It's really pretty.
It's incredible. And there is some really interesting variation. Like, you'll go from, like, one sandy wasteland to another one across the map. And it's, like, got a completely different skybox. The sand is a different color.
Yeah.
It's just, it's, yeah.
They did as much as they could while keeping it perfectly tasteful, too.
Yeah.
It was a completely unique wasteland that will never be experienced in another game.
Which I mean,
it was really, really well done.
Overlooked by some critics who just said it was just totally the same shit everywhere.
Yeah, it's so stupid.
It just came out at a bad time, you know.
It did come out at a really bad time.
Now, I want to throw out Fallout 4. I thought it was... I actually didn't like the world design at all.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
I think New Vegas blows it away in world design. I hated the... When you get into the city and you start, like, going upstairs and there's just, like, too many up and down.
I like the world a lot, actually. I think it was...
I'm okay getting rid of it.
I kind of like that verticality, going up, like, what is it, Trinity Tower?
I like the foresty areas.
Well, so I liked some of the verticality.
Foresty areas. Have you guys been to, like, fucking Glowing Sea?
I've been to the Glowing Sea.
That's the most terrifying and awesome-looking place I've ever seen. And there's, like, pyramids there for some fucking reason.
Sounds horrifying.
Oh, it's scary.
Like I didn't run into a pyramid yet. I just ran into a goddamn death claw.
Oh, there's death claws and fucking, like... But I think, like, I thought maybe not just, like, the interiors, I feel like, in Fallout are really good, and they do some really nice, like, you know, visual storytelling in that way. And, it's not... For me, the overworld is fine. I think you're probably right in that New Vegas is better. But I think there's a lot in, like, especially, like, if you just look around Diamond City, there's places, you know, like, when my wife is playing it, there's places she'll walk into in Diamond City that I haven't even seen yet. And, like, oh, this is a cool little... I think the world in Fallout 4 is good. I don't think it stands with the other ones, though.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good to it.
Yeah.
I think it's better than Fallout 3's world. I've never liked when Fallout goes into, like,
a
cluster city.
Yeah.
Where there's lots of doors everywhere. It just, and then you can go upstairs because Fallout has fucking load screens everywhere. Yeah. I don't want to go into 5 load screens just to go and get some loot. Like, but I have to, and I do. So.
What about Undertale?
Undertale has a great world, it's probably good enough to keep in the running, but that's the best part of the game. They built up all these characters, all this charm. It is insanely unique. It's a world built around, like, sacrifice and compassion, and it's like post-apocalyptic, where, like, all these monsters live down beneath the earth, and so you're like this child who falls in, like, a well, and now you're trying to get out. And there's it's just your odyssey, sort of.
I feel like it works better for like the atmosphere category that we
but the atmosphere,
and, like, is the actual world, like, is it fun to traverse, is it fun to look at, is it...
Oh, it's very simplistic, but the idea behind the world, in a way that Sunless Sea sort of... It paints a picture of this world.
That's fair.
It's the kind of world building where you can, just from the very simple graphics and everything, you can assume there's all this other stuff going on.
Okay.
Which is very unique and clever. But, I haven't beat it yet, so, like, I don't know if I really want to vouch for it, because none of us have really played it.
Yeah.
So.
I'm just going to come out and say... my favorite world this year is probably That's tough. Because I'm looking at Bloodborne here, and you could make a strong case for that. I heard somebody describe the world of Bloodborne, like the game map itself, as like collapsing in on itself, because there's so much of the game that circles back to areas you've already been, and they do it in clever
That's
ways.
That's a lot how the Souls games have always been.
Yeah, but Bloodborne is, I feel like it's sort of in a league of its own. It almost feels, in some ways, it almost feels like kind of claustrophobic, and it adds to the, even though the game has like some huge open areas, it does feel a little, it adds to the tension.
Yeah, you see all this expanse, and you go to all these places, but you really never feel like you're going anywhere because of how often you return.
And then later, and then at the a turning point in the game, you start seeing the giant fucking creatures all over, the, like, polluting the map. And it's super unsettling. They're just almost, like, too big to believe. And they you don't really interact with them. They're just there.
They're just, and they've been there the whole time.
And it's
just
watching. They've been there the whole time.
Just you haven't been able to see them.
Yeah.
Yeah, until, like, halfway.
That's scary as hell. I don't like that.
You kill the catalyst that's holding that the fabric of reality together, that this big bug thing in this weird goddamn lake. And you kill that thing, and the cosmos awaken, basically, this... Which is, that is the theme of the game, is they, these scholars activated this weird ancient key to the cosmos, and this weird alien, just the weird, just pours through this alternate dimension, through like a tear in time, and they're stuck in this loop, this dream that repeats every night. And you kill this thing, which used to be one of the scholars.
I have to play this game.
It turned into this like bug, it's like this slug looking thing. Or it's a spider. It's a
spider.
It's
ROM?
ROM.
Yeah.
You kill it, and it, in this bizarro lake dimension, and as soon as you do, you know you fucked something up, because the giant monsters can now be seen everywhere. The sky is purple. You're like, oh, jeez. These weird-ass alien things are now showing up, and just, oh, man, it's great.
It's in the, I mean...
Now that it's, for me, it's a clear runner-up between Bloodborne and Sunless Sea. They both had a ton of... The Witcher 3 has had decades of actual thought and development into developing one of the best fantasy settings.
But they also, it wouldn't have counted for anything if they didn't do as much justice to that as possible.
Oh, the Witcher 3 handled what had been developed wonderfully.
And I feel like the Witcher 3 is more, it kind of more lives on its, the interesting... the interest in like the story and the quest and stuff more so than it does just having a great game world.
But it should,
the world is great. It's really good, but it's not
the reason why it's great is because as beautiful as it is dangerous and it will bend you over and fuck you in the ass. You stray into the woods, you're not going to get giant rats, you're going to get giant fucking scorpions. And this falls into the expansion pack as well. They seamlessly, either they seamlessly added in more territory to the maps, or they were there the whole time just waiting to be discovered at some point. But I just couldn't believe how naturally the new area for the most recent expansion just gelled into the map.
I love like the dense forest. I want to say that at least. Like
I do love some like the forest and how all the trees you know sway and crack and everything like that.
Skellige was absolutely
gorgeous,
and just like the little settlements with huts and cornfields and there's some really beautiful scenery.
In many ways, The Witcher 3 is one of my favorite open worlds ever, and it's one of my favorite game worlds ever, and I like it. In its lore and development, in the same way that I feel like I like Mass Effect as a brilliant setting, but as like a masterpiece world, as like a world that had all this.
You make a strong case for Bloodborne.
For Bloodborne, and you know, for Sunless Sea. Sunless Sea
sounds really
is like a ridiculously good novel. Yeah. You know, it's like it's one of those things that video games try to be.
Yeah.
But it's got the depth. It's got just the most mystery I've ever seen in a game. I mean, there's because every single island you land on, there's some fucked up, bizarro ass story that makes you think, oh, I never considered that could happen in writing. Like,
I feel like that still falls into more of the atmosphere, though.
But the setting too, because like the kinds of places that you go, like the ideas.
But you don't ever get out of your ship, do you?
Yeah, you dock, and then you have like you can pick the adventures you go on.
I didn't know that.
And you get stories based on that.
Okay.
So like you dock at a city, at a port city, and you have like an action point to like do something interesting. So you can spend those and you make decisions. Like you'll read some text and be like, you dine with these mysterious, beautiful women in this mansion. These three daughters and they're all weird. And there's just all the brilliant writing. There's just basically you figure out, I think they're vampires or cannibals. I don't know. But they keep inviting you for dinner and stuff. And you can make decisions on who to talk to. And they'll all just sort of like.
Oh, I love that.
Tell you, they'll tell you like a story. Like you can be like, oh, I want to talk to the youngest one. And she'll tell you some innocent, you know, childlike story. And it gets really dark, and then like you pass out and you wake up in your ship, and it's like you have like a note saying "come visit again," and you're like, "oh, okay." You know, my favorite story though, like or not one of my favorites. You run out of fuel because your ship's powered by fuel.
What?
It's yeah, like a tugboat kind of thing.
Fucking what? Fuel?
Yeah, you got fuel.
I'm just kidding.
So anyway, so is that really that surprising?
No.
So anyways, you run out of fuel, and which is a dire resource you have to strive for in the game.
Okay.
And you can, there are gods. There are weird gods that you can pray to at certain points.
Oh, weird gods?
There are everything is weird in this game. Yeah. But there are these, some gods are benevolent, and some gods are just fucking weird. And there's this one particular god that you can craft. Like, the game just gives this to you as a desperate measure. Your crew, all of a sudden, when you run out of fuel, they say, but we worship the god of Bethulah. Or whatever. Like, you can make a sculpture out of salt and blood.
I feel like we're getting away from what makes the game world itself.
This is a part of it. You know, you make a sculpture out of salt and blood, and you pray to it. And that may get you fuel. Mm-hmm. And so you pray to it, and there's like a 50% chance if the god smiles upon you, it'll give you some fuel and make some cost to you. Or you'll just pass out, your ship will just appear out of gas in this massive fucking stone arch called like the Eye of God or something. Just something just really menacing. And it's clearly, it's just all, the game throws you from this part of the world all the way to the bottom end corner. You are now at the end of the game world, and you can get this to this point like from the beginning. This massive
sounds world. Like in Bloodborne when they steal you and trap
it's,
you.
It's that kind of thing, except you're out of fuel on your ship. You have the option of cannibalism eventually once you start to go insane, and then but you don't have any options. The only option is to go insane and eat your crew, or to pray to this giant spire, which then like summons Cthulhu. That is like the gate. So
I feel like there's a lot to be said, but I feel like in this category, Sunless Sea just doesn't hang. Just from like the world, and yes, it might be there might be more interesting like mythos and everything like that. But when we're talking about the things that we've deleted. Games from this list before aren't talking about mythos. They're talking about physical game world that you traverse and that you look at and that you stare at. It's not the...
My favorite is
Bloodborne.
I thought
it was like a little of both.
I think we were talking about that, but
because,
didn't we...
Well, yeah, so I guess it's too hard for me to... I think that Sunless Sea has a incredibly designed map.
Yeah.
The map with all the details and the amount of cool shit you can do. Is why I think it
that's fair.
Should be.
What's your win? What do you think? What do you think is number one in this one?
You know what? It's true. It's a good point that Witcher 3 is based off source material, but then again, so is Bloodborne and Sunless Sea, right?
No.
Well, no. Bloodborne is a Japanese guy's take on the Cthulhu.
The Cthulhu. It is
but
a source material.
It's not.
It's a completely
invented
his own
world,
though.
Basically, what he did was. He didn't know much, the director Miyazaki, he didn't know much about Lovecraft, but he was suggested the idea. So then he would read to the art director the stories and just say, create your own vision of these designs. Okay. So the designs are based off of Lovecraft. the sort of weird idea. But Lovecraft is an idea. It's not
slightly
okay. So, but I feel like when we're talking about world, we're talking about what you walk around in.
I'm talking. So the reason I nominate Bloodborne is because the reason I nominate Bloodborne is simply for the fact that the map is so intricately and creatively designed, and it adds to the sense of dread in the game and
okay,
sort
great
of tension.
I'll agree with that.
Witcher 3 adds to the sense of wonder.
I think Bloodborne wins Witcher 3 runner-up.
It's creative.
I just
think it's creative.
That totally works.
I'll yield.
Okay.
I love Witcher 3's world for many reasons. The reason why I love Sunless Sea is very close to the reason.
Sunless Sea will get its due in atmosphere. I feel like that's going to be a strong contender.
We'll just say it wins atmosphere because we.
I think that's. I mean, you've done a good job.
Yeah, let's see when we get there. But favorite world, Bloodborne, winner, Witcher 3, runner up.